Today on Maine Calling, Maine in Religion, how we worship or don't today. Maine is often cited as one of the least religious states in the nation. The others, Vermont and New Hampshire. Why is this? Historically, the church or the meeting house was the center of activity for each community. That is not the case anymore. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we explore the reasons that Maine and Northern New England are among the least religious places in the U.S. and the implications for that. Plus, we'll learn about religions and religious denominations that are expanding in Maine. What is the role of religion in your life, your community? Has that changed? And why? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by contributing listeners and support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. There is something about Northern New England that makes people less likely to identify as religious. Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont all rank among the least religious states and do so in survey after survey. We're going to examine why that is and learn about what faiths do have a presence in Maine and what trends we're seeing. Our guest today, the Reverend Jane Field, who is a Presbyterian minister and Executive Director of the Maine Council of Churches, and Dr. Joshua Urich, who is Assistant Professor of Religious Studies at Colby College. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you consider yourself religious? Do you believe that religion plays an important role in your community or in society? Send us a brief email with your thoughts to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for joining us. Jane, I'm going to start with you and the big question, why? Why does Maine keep coming in at the bottom of these rankings in terms of how religious we are?
If I knew the answer to that, I'd have published a book by now, because lots of ink has been spilled about why. We kind of vie with New Hampshire and Vermont for that illustrious title. I think some of it is a matter of definition and how people think of themselves when they're asked, are you religious? Some of the criteria that are used when that question is asked by, say, the Pew Research Center, someplace like that, may or may not jive with folks in Maine. How often do you pray? Well, some people don't necessarily think of prayer the way others do and might not count it. How often do you attend church or synagogue or mosque? Attendance these days isn't necessarily an indicator that you're not religious. I'm sure Josh will talk about this, but the SBRs, the spirituals but not religious, capturing that part of our identity as a culture here in Maine is really important. I run into people all the time that have a deep reverence for the sacred, often nature-based or earth-based. And that doesn't necessarily get caught in the statistics about being a not religious state. But honestly, you know, Josh is the academic, not me. I live and breathe and move in the religious world. So I'm probably not the best person to come up with a great answer to that question, but it's important to ask.
Well, Joshua, one thing that Jane just said reminded me of something I read. This is from something called the U.S. Religion Census. And one of the highlights from 2020 is, it says, and this is for the U.S. in general, but I think it's related to what Jane was saying. It says the Catholic Church has the most adherents with more than 61 million. The Southern Baptist Convention has the most congregants with 51 million, and the United Methodist Church has the most counties. But what's interesting to me is that more people identify as Catholic than anything else, but more people who actually go to church are Southern Baptist.
Yeah, that's what that means.
Yeah, and so is that also reflected here in Maine? Because There are a lot of people here in Maine who I think identify as Catholic.
That's right. Yeah, it's a similar kind of phenomenon, right? Because there's the French Catholic presence. And so there's folks who sort of inherited culturally their Catholicism and continue to identify that way because that's just part of their identity.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned French Catholic. Let's talk a little bit about Maine historically, because it has changed throughout history. Jane, in the early days, and what I mean by early days is the early days of colonialism, most towns had a meeting house, and that meeting house is today what we think of as congregational, right? And my Correct. Understanding is everyone went, right? Right?
Depends on the town. There were some rules and some church police. I've always wanted that job and never found a way to apply. There was an expectation. However, in my own family history, pretty early on in the colonial period, you see an example of a more nuanced reality. My ninth great grandfather came here as an enslaved person from Scotland, not an indentured servant. He was a slave of Oliver Cromwell, who was sold on the docks in Boston and brought up to Kittery. Because he was Scottish, he was Presbyterian. And the Congregationalists or Puritans looked down their noses at the Scotch Presbyterian. They were not legit. They were not saved. They were not part of the flock. And so what you see very early on, that we're talking 1650, is the Scots in southern Maine were setting up their own mutual aid societies, their own worshiping communities, apart from the Congregational Church. So yes, there was a meeting house, and Josh can probably talk in more detail about what the Puritans and Congregationalists were doing here in Maine at that time, but they weren't the only ones here. And of course, there were Native Americans already here, worshiping in a very different way from the Puritan colonizers.
Joshua, take it away.
Yeah, this is a great thing to think about, because we sort of inherited this myth, right, that the colonists came over and that they were seeking religious freedom and everybody involved was like very pro-God. But if you look at like the records of the Mayflower, for example, like 30% were Puritans who were over trying to like do their religious theocracy. They had no interest in religious freedom, right? They wanted to establish like their own religious theocracy. The other two thirds were just merchants trying to make money, right? And so when we think about these early colonies, we have to remember that the purpose was economic. So there's a small portion of these really intense, probably fairly annoying people who wanted everybody to go to church and who sort of set up these like church police, as Jane said. And so there would be a sense of like, yeah, if you wanted to be part of the more Puritan centered towns, you would show up at church for a little while. And then you might just sneak out the back. And there's this great phrase coined by a scholar named David Hall, calls them horseshed Christians. So they would show up and then they'd go back out where the horses are and just like smoke cigarettes and gamble during the service, just so that they could show their face, you know? So, and I think that was common even in Massachusetts, like the lower portion of this colonies. And then further up north, away from the more like Puritan centered areas, it's much more economically driven. People are coming up north to what we now call Maine for industry, right? They're not necessarily interested in the Congregationalist lifestyle.
Interesting. And then fast forward to the 1800s when we see, you mentioned French Canadians, but also many Irish coming to Maine. And that, of course, brings many people who are Irish Catholic to Maine. Jane, we well know that there was a lot of discrimination then.
Yeah, it was ugly. And it's a chapter that we need to tell and tell honestly about our religious landscape and life and history here in Maine. French Canadian and then Irish Catholics were persecuted. It wasn't even just discrimination. There was violence. Worshiping buildings, houses of worship were burned to the ground. It was ugly and awful. And I've often said, if people think politics are ugly, they ain't seen nothing until they've seen a church politics fight, because this was just a horrific chapter in the life of the ecumenical world, anyway, here in Maine.
Josh, where are we today in terms of do our numbers reflect these national numbers that I just read, that there are more people identify as a Catholic than any other faith in Maine, and second to that, evangelical? Or is that not what it is here in Maine, of those who do identify as religious?
That's not the case here. The majority of Christians in Maine are some form of Protestant. You're looking at like 35% evangelical and mainline combined. So if you think just very broadly speaking, evangelical might skew a little more conservative theologically, mainline might skew a little bit more liberal theologically. So it's like 30, 35%. Yeah. And then 14% of the state Catholic.
Okay. Yeah. And Jane, I think the Maine Council of Churches can say, I can say about it that it represents the more liberal of the what Josh just described. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, that might be one word. We're mainline Protestant, so we're seven denominations. I call them the usual suspects: Episcopal, Lutheran, Presbyterian, United Church of Christ, United Methodist, Presbyterian, that's my team. We also have Quakers and Unitarians at our table, which is highly unusual for an ecumenical coalition, a state council, but we have them, which is wonderful. And they were part of the founders in 1938. We use words like progressive and prophetic rather than liberal. And we are nonpartisan and feel very strongly that the role of a prophetic voice of faith in the public square is to be a moral conscience that's regardless of party, that holds our leaders and our community to the moral imperative of justice and compassion and peace. And that's true no matter what, whether there's an R or a D or an I next to a legislator's name when we do that work.
Okay, well, Jane, I want to ask you, among these mainline churches, have you seen indeed a drop off in attendance over the last few decades? Was there a moment in time when that started to happen?
Yeah, it started happening, I think, and Josh will have hard data on this, certainly after the 1950s, after the post-war boom. But a really important trend to be aware of that is right now happening is that Quakers and Unitarian Universalist churches in Maine are seeing a very sharp uptick in attendance and participation since the election last year. They've had to open their balcony at First Parish in Portland, which they never used to have to do, just to fit everybody in. People with kids are coming. Note that those two traditions are not Christian. They have roots in Hebrew and Christian scripture. That's where they come out of, but they are no longer Christian, meaning they don't espouse beliefs about Jesus Christ the way that a Methodist or a Presbyterian or a Congregationalist might. But we are seeing, I'm hearing it from pastors all over the state, that those two denominations are seeing a sharp rise in attendance and membership right now.
That's so interesting. Josh, what about evangelical churches? Are we seeing an increase in those?
We very weirdly, yes. There was sort of this precipitous decline.
I'm going to stop. You said very weirdly, yes. Why is that weird?
Well, because the general trend among religion in America, and especially Christianity, has been pretty steeply downward. And so the fact that evangelicalism not only leveled off, but grew a little bit in Maine, like 2%, but it's still something. That's a surprise. The best we can do is speculate about why that is. And there's never going to be just one answer. The answer that I tend to go with is that there is an increasing interest in more theologically conservative traditions. There was a New York Times piece recently about the rise of Orthodox Christianity, especially among young white men. They call them orthobros. And I think there might be something along those lines accounting for why there was this very minor uptick in evangelicalism here.
Yeah. I totally agree, Josh. And what we're seeing is the rise of Christian nationalism is directly a causal effect of that uptick. You know, it starts at the top with what's going on in Washington, and leadership in the MAGA movement is strongly tied with Christian nationalism, which I would argue, and this is a whole nother conversation, is not Christian. It's a political ideology, and it uses the language and the texts and the symbols of Christianity, corrupts them and hijacks them for gaining political power. but it makes it very attractive to people who are drawn to a rigid, control-based kind of practice of religion that's tied to partisan politics in America today.
I want to
I'm
go
gonna
back to something. Okay, finish your thought, Josh, and
well,
then.
I'm not sure. I think it's not only top down, because we've been here before in Maine, right? Like you mentioned, the anti-immigration stuff. That was, I mean, at that point in history, the Irish were they were considered so different they weren't even classified as white, right? And that tied into the anti, so the anti-Catholicism was also racially tinged, and it was also anti-immigrant. And in the 1920s, right, there was this resurgence in the
The
Klan in
Klan
Maine,
here.
and like I hate to say it, but some of this is grassroots. There's a sort of grassroots reactionary move against what is seen as, I'm trying to imagine what sort of my super conservative relatives would say, society going to hell in a handbasket or something,
Well,
right?
I
And
want to
just
talk
as you're
about
saying,
that.
they go to the conservative stuff.
I want to tie together these ideas of is society going to hell in a handbasket? And Jane, you talking about the role of the Maine Council of Churches is to be a moral conscience. And what I'm wondering, as fewer and fewer people consider themselves religious, as fewer and fewer people go to church, what is the impact of that, Jane? Do we have less of a moral compass, as some people might argue? Is there something measurable? Are we less generous? People often used to give money through their church or support people who were church members when they were going through a crisis. A church would gather around someone. Is there a difference in society now, in Maine society, that fewer people are going to church?
I don't see it, but I want to be clear about my particularity and my lens, right? Like the end of the pool I'm swimming in doesn't mean I'm seeing the whole picture, but I'm not seeing it in particular in the last 18 months. Right after the election, we held five town hall meetings online to focus on how people of faith could address the harm being threatened against our neighbors. So we did one on the immigrant community, one on the LGBTQ community, one on women seeking reproductive health, and one on the environment. We had 2,000 people show up and give thousands of dollars to the organizations that are working to help stand with and for those communities. So we were inundated with phone calls from people within and beyond the churches saying, we have to do something. What can we do? The generosity has been overwhelming. There are people who stand in front of the Cumberland County Jail every Wednesday now praying, not waving vulgar signs, not flipping off people who drive by, praying and being reverent to stand in solidarity with everyone caught up in the ICE detainment system. I'm just not seeing that. And when we go to Augusta, our lane, I like to say we're a pick a lane kind of organization, is advocacy for public policy at the state legislature. We stay out of the federal world mostly. We stay out of municipal fights, but we're at the state legislature. Our secular partners say to us, we need you there. We need someone who can speak to the moral imperative. You use language we can't. So we have 10 partners: Maine Equal Justice, Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition, Environmental Priorities Coalition, Maine Council on Aging. They beg us to come. So I don't think there's a divide like that here right now.
Well, but let me ask you, Josh, the same question, and maybe your answer is just going to go in a whole different direction, maybe not. Is society different because fewer people are going to church?
I need like 6 years to answer that question. It's such a
Well, we need to
gigantic
go to a
question.
break in a couple minutes. Go ahead.
I'll answer it quickly. It's the other way around. People are not going to church because society is different.
Ooh, good answer.
It doesn't resonate anymore, you
You're
know,
right.
the way it used to. That's as Jane, as you mentioned, like it's much more satisfying for people to like go out in the woods with their tumbler of coffee and like commune with nature than it is to sit in a pew with their neighbors and do the traditional religion thing.
Yeah, but sitting in the woods with coffee is not helping out a member of your church who's in crisis. Is
Yeah, I mean,
there an impact on community?
community moves in different places. It
Yeah,
moves, you know,
exactly.
it goes to different places.
I mean, look at Maine needs, right? Look at how people are stepping up. it takes your breath away. Their new warehouse, just I was there the other day. I couldn't believe how big it's grown. And the churches that are running food pantries, essential pantries, firewood banks, diaper banks, it's still going on. And people who may not go to that church still support those efforts and are very engaged and involved.
All right. Well, we
And
do
lots
need
of
to
people
take a
don't get
break.
engaged.
Well, yeah. Well, and I guess that's my question. You say, Josh, lots of people don't get engaged. Is that because there's no longer this structure that's commonplace in which people were expected to be engaged?
I mean, in churches, like lots of there's just as there were horseshed Christians then, there are horseshed Christians now, right? So
Oh,
there's
yeah.
plenty of people who go to church and just don't do anything,
Gotcha.
you know?
Okay. Well, we do have to take a break, but we will continue this fascinating conversation. This is Maine Calling, and we're talking about the role of religion in Maine. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're discussing how important religion is in Maine and what factors make Maine a less religious place. Joining me, Josh Urich, who is Assistant Professor of Religious Studies at Colby College, and Jane Field, Executive Director of the Maine Council of Churches and a Presbyterian minister. Share your thoughts. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or call us at 1-800-399-3566. And I'm going to correct myself. Josh Urich is a professor at Colby College. Josh, before we go to calls, though, I want to ask you one thing. Maine stands out in other demographics as well. Not just are we the one of the least religious states, if not the least religious states, we are also one of the oldest states in the nation. We are also one of the whitest states in the nation. Are these things all related?
Oh, yeah, huge, huge, right? There's a generational gap when we talk about religion. So if you were a baby boomer, you sort of inherited this world. Like your parents lived in a world in which disbelief and irreligion was kind of not really an option. Like everyone was just like default religious. And then the 60s and 70s happened and that kind of changes, right? And so now there's new generations of kids growing up for which religion is just one choice among many. And not only that, but the older generations don't know how to engage with that gap, right? And so as the older generation ages out of churches, they're unable to pull their kids back in to replace them. And so one of the reasons that Maine is seeing such a huge decline in religion, or in at least like church attendance in the last 15 years since the data has been collected, is because of this aging out process.
And what about racial demographics?
The racial demographics are a kind of a different animal. As Jane mentioned, there's this element of like white religious nationalism that leads some people to go back to church. There are also there it, there's things that are too complicated that I don't want to talk about right now because there's no way I can answer that in a short enough time that wouldn't get me into trouble.
Okay. We'll go to
We
Kim,
are
who's calling from.
seeing.
Go ahead, Jane.
I was just going to say, we are seeing more diversity and a lot of the communities of faith that are coming out of the immigrant community are non-white. So we have Christian, Muslim, Jewish to some extent, although that's sort of a different ball of wax, Baha'i, Buddhist, Hindu, all here in Maine now.
Yeah, we'll go to Kim calling from Cumberland. Hi, Kim, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to speak to my personal experience, certainly acknowledging what both guests have talked about. But when we moved to Maine, I was not a Christian. I met my neighbors who were and ultimately became a Christian. And what I have found in Maine is that, an odd side benefit of it being a very not religious state is that typically the Christians that I've met are genuine and authentic, as opposed to other states where it's so much more cultural that someone might call themselves a Christian or a different faith. But it's just
Kim, can I ask a
how
couple
it's
questions? What
structured. Of
denomination and
course.
where'd you move from?
I moved from California. And I pretty much non-denominational, probably identify more with Protestant than anything else. Definitely more of a progressive. So progressive evangelical, possibly, is what I would call myself.
So you found that the conversation is different here, but people who, if they say to you, I am a Christian, they're more likely to be what you identify with as a Christian than just using it in sort of a really broad term.
Or cultural, yes, where, you know, in the South, perhaps someone might say they're a Christian and it'd be more like what Josh was describing, where, you know, they go to church on Sundays because that's what you do, versus I think here you have to work for it a little bit harder. And because it is countercultural, it tends to be really about what you believe versus what maybe you just kind of have grown up with. That's been my experience.
Yeah, Kim, and thank you. I've lived in other parts of the country as well. And would you say there's a bit of a, and I'll turn to my guests for this, is there kind of a, I don't know if the right word is a snowball effect, but, you know, we are all influenced by our friends and neighbors. And if you live in a neighborhood, Jane, where everybody goes to church, aren't you more likely to go to church than if you live in a neighborhood where people don't?
Yeah. I mean, look at the difference between New England and the South. And by the way, Colin Woodard has done really interesting work on this. If you look at his maps, it is just mind blowing. We had him speak at an event for us in September. Almost 425 people showed up, which for us is huge. It tells me there's a hunger for people trying to make sense out of all the things you're asking about today, Jennifer. And yes, it absolutely is different. And I think the caller is right that it is more countercultural here. But what I knew I was going to do the show, right? So I was asking around, like, I'm old and decrepit, but I asked some of my younger colleagues and friends, like, why don't you go to church? And they said they were turned off by the ultra right wing partisan Christian nationalist stuff. And in fact, when I'm in circles with secular justice workers, they say, God, if I'd known church was what you guys do, I might go. So there's also that element at play here as well.
Kim, thanks for your call. I'm going to go now to Rabbi Dr. David Friedenreich, who is a professor and chair of Jewish studies at Colby College, also historian in residence at the Maine Jewish Museum. Rabbi Friedenreich, thank you so much for calling in. Tell me about Maine's Jewish community. How many people here identify as Jewish?
So how many people identify depends on who you ask. A Maine Jewish community study identified 19,000 adults in the state as Jews. That's about 1 1/3% of the population. When the Pew folks ask who identifies as Jews, they get a slightly smaller number because they only count people who identify religiously. A decent percent of Jews in Maine identify as Jews of no religion. Catholics don't have that option to label themselves as, and so, you know, many Catholics in Maine, cultural Catholics, don't count in the religious landscape study. Jews absolutely count one another as Jews, even if they don't believe in God or don't identify as being religious.
Yeah, I can understand that. Let me ask you about the people who are here who do identify as Jewish. We know from watching TV that in other parts of the U.S., there are communities of people who are very Orthodox. There are not many people like that today here in Maine, correct?
That's correct.
Why do you think?
To be a committed Orthodox Jew tends to be associated with being involved in an immersive community that has a set of resources that requires a critical mass of other Orthodox Jews. There used to be small pockets of Orthodox Jewish life in this state. There are still some Orthodox synagogues and a handful of Orthodox individuals, but many Orthodox Jews in Maine chose to move to larger communities with more of the resources that they're looking for. And many Orthodox Jews would never consider moving to Maine in the first place because this state doesn't have the kinds of resources that they're prioritizing.
Great. Well, I so appreciate you calling in. That's Rabbi Dr. David Friedenreich, a professor and chair of Jewish studies at Colby College. And on the line with us now is the Reverend Dr. Jody Cohen Hayashida, who is organizer of Multi-Faith Justice Maine with the Maine People's Alliance. Thanks for calling us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm wondering, tell us what your group, who your group represents.
Sure. So Multi-Faith Justice Maine includes people from across the spectrum of faith traditions, which means we do have members who are Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Baha'i, Hindu. We have folks who identify with various Earth Center traditions, and we also have a sizable group who would self-identify as spiritual but not religious.
I'm wondering if you feel as though there's a welcoming attitude in Maine today toward different faiths.
I do. I think to a certain extent, how sincere that welcome is will depend on which group is extending the welcome. Hmm. We, for example, work very closely with Jain and the Maine Council of Churches, which goes out of its way to be welcoming and a good partner. And then there are other corners, that are perhaps a little more closed off.
Well, thanks so much for calling in, Dr. Jody Cohen Hayashida, who is organizer of Multi-Faith Justice with the Maine People's Alliance. So many calls coming in. The board is full. But if you want to try to get through, it's 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Cersei calling from Portland.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling from the Portland New Church Center for Sacred Arts. We're in Portland, and we serve mostly the spiritual but not religious, or people who are recovering from religious harm, or people who are longing for belonging without any dogma. We've got many building users who use our historic sanctuary. There's about 52 different groups that use the space throughout the year. And then we have Sunday services that are geared towards ceremony, ritual, music, and the arts that are drawing very steady attendance. And our community is growing. It feels very exciting to be part of just the spiritual innovations that are happening there.
I'm so interested. That was going to be my question for you, Cersei, if you're growing. And Jane, I'm wondering if this is related to what you've told us about Quakers and Unitarians. You're nodding, but we can't see you nodding on the radio.
I thought you were asking the caller, not me. I thought you were asking Cersei. I think it's absolutely part of the same phenomenon. And I was just saying in the chat that we at MCC, along with the Brunswick Interfaith Community and BTS Center, are hosting an event on Martin Luther King Day to talk about the way artists and spirituality are deeply interconnected in the work of building beloved community. Maya Williams is one of the panelists. I'm really excited about that. But so we'll have poets and figural artists and musicians speaking about that. And yes, we're absolutely seeing that. ARRT is another group in Maine that builds that bridge between artists and those who are hungry spiritually.
All right. Thanks so much, Cersei, for your call. As I mentioned, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on social media. We're talking about religion in Maine, the role it plays, why Maine is one of the least religious states in the nation, and whether that matters. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, religion in Maine. My guest today, the Reverend Jane Field with the Maine Council of Churches, and Joshua Urich with Colby College, who teaches religious studies. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Before we go back to calls, Josh, I do need to ask you, we're talking about Maine as though we're a small state and we're heterogeneous. And boy, that's the opposite is true. I have noticed when I drive in northern Maine, or not even that far northern Maine, when I cross maybe past Waterville on my way to Bangor, I start noticing the radio stations, many more evangelical radio stations. Are there more people who proportionally are would consider themselves religious in Northern Maine than Southern Maine? Or is that just, is there another reason so many radio stations are evangelical stations in Northern Maine?
The radio station, I'm not sure. I kind of wonder if it's just a lack of other options that goes on up there. But I have had friends comment on that. I don't know. But what one speculation is that Northern Maine lacks the density and concentration of population to sustain physical churches. A lot of the cool opportunities that Jane and Circe were talking about are in urban centers, right? It's like in Portland, where there's enough people to give enough money to sustain buildings and pastor salaries and all that. Whereas if you're up north and everybody's really dispersed, it's very difficult to get enough people to pay salaries, to pay rent, even to drive the 25 miles to get to the nearest church, especially in wintertime.
All right.
Yeah,
go ahead, Jane.
We really found, as horrible as COVID was, one of the lessons we learned as an organization serving people of faith is that moving our programmatic life online and our worship life, like we've held prayer vigils online, we're suddenly reaching those dispersed populations that are up north. I mean, don't get me wrong, with our seven denominations, there are 400 churches across the state that they have, and there are churches up north, but they are further apart. They are smaller, and they do have a harder time, as Josh said, keeping the lights on and paying a pastor. So being online has formed community in a way that I wouldn't have guessed before COVID.
Joining us now is Beth McAvoy, who is Local Communications Director for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thanks so much for calling in, Beth.
Of course.
Thanks, you made Jennifer. An announcement this week that there will be a new Mormon temple located in Portland. Tell us what is planned.
So, yeah, we were so excited as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to hear the announcement that a new temple will be built in Portland, Maine, the first temple in the state. And church leaders want Latter-day Saints everywhere to have easy access to temples, which we regard as the most sacred places of worship on earth. And so this is so exciting for the members here in Maine.
Will you explain what is different than between a church and a temple? Because we do know that there are Latter-day Saint churches around Maine. What is the difference?
That's right. So there's more than 11,000 members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Maine, and we have 27 different meeting houses. And unlike regular meeting houses, you know, regardless of your religious affiliation, anyone is welcome, more than welcome, to come into our Latter-day Saint meeting houses and attend our services on Sunday. But temples are dedicated to performing ordinances that Latter-day Saints believe unite families and individuals to God's in eternal ways. And so those are for members in good standing are allowed to enter temples. And so a member must be observing the basic principles and tenets of our faith and attest to that fact to his or her local leaders once every 2 years in order to enter a temple. So that while they're not open to the public, we do something called we do open them to the public before they're dedicated. So once this temple is built, it will be open to the public for anyone to go through before it's dedicated.
Okay. And to be clear, you don't know where it's going to be built yet or what the timeline is, right?
We don't have a timeline or a location yet, though typically temples have, you know, years of process in the design and then construction. But yeah, we don't have a timeline yet.
And Beth, is there a growing presence of Mormons in Maine?
Well, the numbers steadily grow. It's really not about growth. It's about having access to the temple. So we have members as far as Caribou in Maine. And because there's only two other temples in New England, one in Belmont, Massachusetts, and one in Hartford, Connecticut, they're just not as accessible. I mean, that's more than 6 hours for our members in Caribou. So the church really just wants to make it more accessible for everyone in the area. And that's what this announcement really was about.
Thanks so much for calling in, Beth. I really appreciate it. Beth McAvoy, Local Communications Director for the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. Josh, the Mormon faith is not the only one that is growing in Maine. Another is, and we are planning to do a Maine Calling program on this in the near future, the Amish. I mean, I think anybody who goes to the Common Ground Fair in Unity will see people on their Amish buggies. But in Aroostook County, there's also a growing population. What do we know about the reasons for that?
We don't. There's speculation that I have, which basically relates to practicality, right? Like there's more open land and it's not as urban. You think about where the Amish tend to be located now, which is a little bit further south, a little bit further east, Pennsylvania, western New York. It's quite dense. It's quite densely populated. It's urban. There's not a lot of open space that's easily available. Whereas you head up to northern Maine and you've got ample.
I'm going to read just a few emails here. An email from Alice. I'm a lifelong Catholic, moved to Maine from Maryland, New York, Massachusetts, and other places. Recently, priests from Africa, especially Cameroon, have brought such a refreshing breath of life into the local parishes. It has made a wonderful difference in participation. So thank you for that, Alice. Stephanie writes, from an atheist point of view, I find it interesting that conversations surrounding how religious groups serve justice and community imply that somehow my moral compass of solidarity with community isn't authentic or valid or meaningful because it doesn't come from a spiritual or religious purpose. And Jane, you're agreeing with her. You're not, you didn't want to insinuate that. Yeah.
And no, I'm so glad that's been said. I really appreciate that call, that emailer. Absolutely.
And here's an email from Rob. I'm 29. I was raised Catholic, but for many years did not attend church or actively participate in my faith. About a year ago, I began attending Mass again at a more progressive Catholic parish and was surprised to find out how much peace their regular religious services bring me. I've now been going to Mass regularly and find it helps to center my life around causes I care about, like the environment and social justice. I would recommend more folks my age give a faith tradition that resonates with them a try, because I think it really does help bring stronger moral compasses in people and communities. So three perspectives there. Thank you all for emailing in. Let's see, we'll go to John, who's calling from Holton. Hi, John, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I've been, most of my life was involved in the Episcopal Church. And I find that, I hate to say it, but I think, especially today, it's more true than it used to be. There's too much politics involved in church. And that is, if you don't believe what they're believing, you're not a Christian. And all around. And I mean, because I've been to different churches. Because I've been married, and my wife chose to be single. And so she divorced me, and we went to different churches then. And she was looking for something, and she still hasn't found it.
John, but, I think you bring up a really important point, and I'm going to talk to you about that, Jane. I have attended churches in the past that I did not go back to because I wanted a break from my job. I didn't want to hear about politics at church. I wanted to hear about something else. So I'm hearing what John is saying here. Tell me about that. Both in all kinds of churches too, there is there indeed more of a conversation about things that are not, you know, are current affairs more a part of church than they used to be? And is that okay?
They should be. Current affairs belong in church. That's different than partisan politics, however. And I would agree with the caller that partisan politics don't belong in worship spaces. It's not appropriate. And I believe that, I'm staying in my lane, right? Like I'm Christian, I'm Presbyterian, so that's the thing I can speak most knowledgeably about, although it's true for other faith traditions for sure. If you read the sacred texts and study the history of your tradition, it's not faithful to ignore current events or to look for ways that your faith informs stances and positions on things that are happening in the world. So, my favorite it's not a favorite story. One of the stories I like to tell is that the Sunday after the 2016 presidential election, the lectionary, which for some traditions is sets of scripture that are assigned, you don't get a choice as the person preaching, that's what you have to talk about. It was the Sermon on the Mount. And a colleague of mine preached a sermon on the Sermon on the Mount because that's what he was supposed to do. And a member of the ruling council of that church got up, marched out, screamed at him and said, how dare you be political in my church?
Okay, for those
of us missing the point.
For those listeners who don't know what you're talking about, why would the Sermon on the Mount be seen by some as political?
Because it talks about taking care of the poor, welcoming the stranger, feeding the hungry, doing justice, loving kindness, walking with humility. And to some people, that sounded like a political message. I've also seen a cartoon recently by one of my favorite religious cartoonists who shows Jesus up on the cross and two people whispering to each other saying, he really shouldn't have gotten so political. I think that's a great summary of what the issues here are that we're talking about. However, that doesn't mean churches should exclude people with a litmus test of what their politics are. Churches are a great place for people to learn how to speak across difference and be in community together when it's done right. And I think what your caller's identifying is that an awful lot of the time we're dropping the ball and not doing that right.
Yeah, and Gerald here has sent an email saying something similar. He says, religion has lost its mystical sense and is really political. The sense of spiritual evolution is lost when anyone who dissents is ostracized. There is no longer a sense of Christian charity. I can't continue in this manner. So John and Gerald agreeing with one another. Thank you for calling in, John. Let's see. We will go to Paul, who's calling from Dresden. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
I'm an retirable priest to several parishes in my area in Dresden.
Paul, you're breaking up just a little bit. I think you said you're a retired Episcopal priest. If you're in your house, can you walk to the spot where you have the best service? Oh, shoot. I'm going to ask if you can call back and call back quickly because we're almost out of time here. Let's see. We will go to Stephanie calling from South Portland. Hi, Stephanie. Go ahead. Stephanie, are you there? Well, darn. Stephanie, I'm going to give you one more chance. Are you there?
Yeah.
Problem. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Hi. I've just recently become aware that a lot of young men have been joining the Russian Orthodox Church, and particularly in Maine. And hi.
Yeah. So, Stephanie, this is something Josh brought up before. We are seeing a small subset of people turning to more Orthodox faiths. The data confirms that, right?
Yeah, the data confirms it. It's, you know, okay. There's also a sense that this is itself such a political flashpoint that people like to talk about it. There are lots of people joining more theologically conservative denominations. When I say theological conservatism, I don't mean political conservatism, okay?
Gotcha.
So there's lots of people who want a little bit more religious structure offered by something like the Orthodox Church. And groups like the New York Times, right, if you read that piece about the growth of the quote-unquote Orth Bros, it sort of rubbed me the wrong way as a scholar of religion because it was clearly a political hit piece against the white nationalist right that's kind of elided all of this movement towards Catholicism and towards the Orthodox Church as a politically driven thing. Certainly there's some of it, but if you read that piece carefully, there's a few quotes buried where there's recent converts in the Orthodox Church say, you know, this is a small group, these Orthobros. Like, it's a small group, and the church does a really good job of gatekeeping them.
Stephanie, thanks for calling. We're going to try to go back to Paul. Paul, we just have a few seconds left. I'm hoping we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. All my comment was that during COVID, we went to Zoom worship experiences, and when COVID ended, most of the churches I serve couldn't wait to go back to doing it the way they were doing it before. Nobody saw the opportunity to reinvent ourselves and go forward in a new way.
Interesting. Thank you for that insight. But Jane says some churches did, right, Jane?
Oh, yeah. It's changed monumentally. Every church I go to live streams as well as has in person. It's expected. If you don't do it, you're considered like dropping the ball there. We all do it now.
But you cannot rely on it. Otherwise,
no.
What he's talking about, right? Like if everybody starts doing live stream and not going to church, the church collapses. Like,
that's right.
Within months. Yeah. It doesn't take long.
Nope. That's right.
Well, thank you all. And we could talk about this all afternoon, obviously, but we are out of time. The clock is a taskmaster. Our guest today, Josh Urich, who is an assistant professor of religious studies at Colby College, and Jane Field, a Presbyterian minister and executive director of the Maine Council of Churches. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue, Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about the magic of light in the wintertime and a holiday special that will be presented by our Maine Public Classical team. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.